This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
I don't know what I'm allowed to say or not say anymore.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode, Season 2, Episode 5 of Bikes and Men. All right. Here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
When David T. Cole, who can barely read, is ripping on your literary references, you know you've gone astray. Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Before we get into this episode, we actually have quite a bit of site business up top. First of all, for our Patreon listeners, we want to tease the topic that is coming up for our next Patreon episode, which is dropping May 15th. We're going to be talking about 6 Feet Under, Season 2, Episode 3, The Plan. 6 Feet Under, it's on HBO Go. This is, of course, the first of Grant Show's mini arc on that series. So that is what we'll be talking about in our next Patreon episode. If you would like to join us, go to patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you access to all of our bonus episodes as well. This week, as we're recording this, starsinthehouse.com, which is a series of Zoom reunions of various casts to benefit the Actors Fund, got the cast of Melrose Place together, and I watched it. So we're going to link to the video in the show notes because you can watch it as well. But I'm just going to I don't necessarily recommend you watch the whole thing. It's over an hour. I'm just going to give you highlights. I do recommend that you go and donate to Stars in the House because it's a great cause, and we'll link to that in the show notes as well. So here are some highlights from the Stars in the House Zoom reunion of Melrose Place. Here we go. Daphne Zuniga, bad split ends. I know we're all having a hard time. Put your shit in a ponytail.
That was happening like 20, 25 years ago too. Like, she started out with such a strong hair game on Melrose, yeah. And then it, like, it's already devolving. Mm-hmm. Like, girl, no.
Her skin is amazing, though. We also, I mean, I learned, I'm sure people knew this at the time, I did not, that she and Darren Starrs were roommates in college. And then
I didn't know that.
Again, afterwards, and lived apparently in an apartment complex not unlike Melrose Place. So when he was looking to cast a character who was like dark and from New York, he reached out to her. So that's how she came into the show. Moving on, Thomas Calabro, Marsha Cross, Josie Bissett. All of them didn't have a ton to say. Apparently, Marsha Cross was the prime mover for this reunion happening because they had previously done one for Desperate Housewives. Calabro, bit leathery, but he shaved his head for quarantine. It's doing it for me, I have to say. He says he had wanted to play Billy because Michael was such a nothing role until Kimberly showed up. And originally, he says they really were just colleagues on the page, but that he and Marsha Cross had given their scenes like a bit of a twist that showed producers what it could turn into. And, you know, maybe that's giving himself too much credit for where the storyline went. But given how dull those early episodes are, I don't think so. I feel like I believe him when he says that he kind of pushed that in a certain direction, frankly.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm content to let him take credit for that.
Yeah, who cares? Josie Bissett barely in the reunion, as we know from watching the wedding march. She looks good. Also, while we're here, it's possible because we did them like before we started talking about Melrose Place on this podcast. Go to Dave and Jeb Aren't Mean, another podcast about the Hallmark Movie Network. Because you can hear us, or the movies of the Hallmark Network, rather. You can hear us talk about the series The Wedding March, which stars both Josie Bissett and Jack Wagner, because they're a hoot. Go back into the archives and dig those out. Out of her Wedding March wig, she has a choppy short haircut that looks good on her. It's a little mumsy, but you know, she's in her 50s, so fine, I'll allow it. Andrew Hsu and Courtney Thorne-Smith. He mentions that he replaced another actor who had originally been cast as Billy, Stephen Fanning, as we have discussed on this podcast before, and that when he auditioned again, when they were recasting Billy, he did so with Courtney Thorne-Smith, you know, to test their chemistry. So he credits her with his getting the role. They are boring, duh, but it's clear that they still really love each other as friends, which is sweet. I smiled when they were talking to each other, because it's like, oh, you guys are buddies. It's nice.
I mean, I don't know. Like, we beg on his quote acting all the time, but mm-hmm. I think he at least tried, and that's a class move to be like, I got the role because of her.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true.
No doubt. He also says that his mother gave him the note that he needed to close his mouth on screen. So thank you for trying, Mrs. S. Sorry, he didn't listen.
Ouch.
And at one point, the hosts, who are James Wesley and Seth Rudetsky, they ask about wardrobe that the cast members kept. And Hsu says he mentions a pair of Australian boots that his son still wears. And I am now deceased because
he
has a son who's like in his 20s. Grant Show. That is how they pronounce his name, which made me go through video interviews with him to check how he is introduced. It is just like the word. So sorry for all the times we said Shao. We didn't know. I see him every week because I'm the one person in America who watches the new Dynasty on the CW. And even in a tiny Zoom window, I was like, damn, he hot. He's still hot. He's really hot.
Yeah.
Guys. He has grown a quarantine goatee. I guess what? It's also doing it for me. They ask him whether he had ever wanted to revisit the Jake Kelly storyline. And he said no, because he found it creepy and is correct. So good for him for at least being on the right side of history.
Word.
Okay. Doug Savant and Laura Layton obviously quarantining together because they are married in real life. They are so cute. So cute. They both look so good. Like, for real, Laura Layton, ageless. They were sharing a pair of AirPods, like they each had one, which is adorable.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. And because Wesley and Rudetsky are gay, there's some objectification of Billy and Jake and what they had to do to maintain their bodies. And the actresses are like, they ate everything and kept their washboard abs. We hate them. But Doug Savant cheerfully says, I have a fat father, as Laura Layton cracks up and covers her face. But his point is, he, unlike them, had to be careful to stay camera ready, and he appreciates the kudos for the effects of his hard work, which I thought very relatable. I like that.
Yeah.
He also asked what it was like to play a gay character at the time, and he gave a thoughtful answer, which I'm sure he, you know, has had time to polish, but still. Mm. About the importance of representation, but yet it was not self-aggrandizing, which was nice. And they're adorable. I love them. They were very cute. The production of the show, they talked a lot about how they crammed in so many episodes every season. Apparently there were times when they would be shooting like six episodes at the same time out of order and like crossing back and forth between basically two base camps of locations in order to get them all done. Yeah. Courtney Thorne-Smith was like, you know, she was trying to remember, you know, was your baby born at this point? Like, she just, they didn't know, you know, from scene to scene what order things had actually transpired in, which is crazy.
We should remember that when it's like, why are you wearing this same thing that you were wearing in a scene 2 days ago?
Yes.
And also, what's with the pregnancy pad? Like, let's, you know.
Yeah.
Let's try to remember that when we get to those bits.
Great point. Daphne Zuniga describes the process as hit your mark and bark, saying that there's no time for rehearsal, and sort of describes in a very self-deprecating way, because she had come from films and theater and stuff. This was the first TV that she ever did, that she was in a trailer when like a PA came to the door and was like, they called you to set. They need you. What are you doing? She was like, I'm preparing. They were like, they need you. You don't have time for this. And she was like, oh, got it. No actor bullshit here. Okay. Which was cute. Grant's show says that one note they got was that they should talk faster, which I thought was funny. And Andrew Hsu claimed he learned his lines driving to work, like actually driving himself with script pages spread on the steering wheel. So good thing he never killed anyone or himself. And Finally, and most importantly, Heather Locklear. I was not going to watch because I assumed that she would not be there because, as you may have read over the past several years, she has had some issues with substance abuse that have been fairly high profile.
Yeah.
But then Molly Lambert, who runs the Melrose Place Couture account on Instagram, which we will also link to in the show notes, told me that Heather has 1 year sober and would be there. And it was true. She was sitting on the edge of her tub. The lighting was not great. Otherwise, she seems well. And Andrew Hsu made a point of saying that people at the time when the show was on used to always ask him what Heather Locklear was like. And he would say she was an absolute sweetheart and a dream to work with and professional and great. And everyone else nodded and agreed and were all very clearly happy to see her doing well. And Heather Locklear cried. And that was the best part. So that's why I left it for last. It was really sweet. So.
Yeah, I remember from the time, like in People magazine interviews, they would be like heroically digging for dirt on her, and there was none. Mm-hmm. Like, apparently she was just like a pro and really nice and was used to the soap atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I forget which one she was on. She might have been another Santa Barbara vet.
Well, she was on Dynasty before this.
Yeah, and I know her one time husband and castmate Jack Wagner was also on I think Santa Barbara before GH. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure that she projected a certain aura because she dated rock stars and stuff too, but you know, that was just her interests and not a sign of, you know, her character. So that was very sweet, and I was glad to see her doing well. So keep it up, Heather. We're pulling for you. We want you to do well. Yep. We love you.
One day at a time.
Exactly. All right, on to this episode, starting with our D plot. Matt has to crush Dr. Rush's dreams. Matt waylays Michael in the hall at the hospital to tell him about Dr. Katya and her dinner invitation. Matt, make other friends, but because Michael doesn't care and just tells Matt to bring a bottle each of red and white, like that's the issue. So Matt explains the actual issue. Michael doesn't see what the problem is until Matt spells it out, which is, you know, it's a date and he's gay. He doesn't know how to tell her. I'm sorry, there's a 0% chance he's never faced this issue before, but regardless.
Yeah, come on. He went to high school, no?
Right, and college. But Michael is still unconcerned in clip two.
Oh, man, I wouldn't worry about it. I'm sure she knows. How?
That line reading is so, like, it's very funny.
Yes.
But it's also really weird that it's like, you've been gay this whole time.
Yeah.
This show was created by a gay man. Like, can we not get a little oversight on concepts like gaydar and whatnot?
Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Anyway, but that line reading was brilliant.
It was very funny.
Doug.
So then it's time to head over to Dr. K's place for the big date. Let's find out if Matt has this story straight. Clip three.
So, what are you looking for in a relationship?
Broad shoulders, big cock. Just kidding.
An Audi, not an Emmy. Yikes.
Okay, so this is when we cut inside and see that Matt has worn a gayer shirt than we have literally ever seen him in before. The print is like faces of Roman statuary. Obviously, this is in the visual aids. It's crazy.
Oh my God. I'm really surprised that he'd like cut out a post-it note into a thought bubble and stick it on one of their faces like, I'm gay.
Yeah, I think my file name for that picture is, if you can't tell her, maybe your shirt can, because it is.
I think I cut obviously the same one,
of course,
and I won't need to use it, but I think my caption was something like when you can't bring yourself to, or like say it with a shirt or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that shirt.
What Matt actually says he's looking for in a relationship is honesty and how a person treats other people, sense of humor, intelligent chemistry, the usual. He had all that once, but then made his job the priority at the expense of his relationship. And Dr. K has a follow-up, clip four.
What happened to her?
It
It was a him, Katya.
I feel so stupid.
No.
Why didn't you tell me you were gay?
Well, why didn't you tell me you were straight? I'm sorry. I guess I'm. It's my fault. I should have said something earlier.
No, it's okay.
It's just sometimes I feel like I'm back in high school, and if I were to have said something that, I don't know, maybe your response would have been, you know, why are you telling me that for? What did you think, that I was interested in you? And I.
Well, the truth is, I was interested. But we can still be friends, can't we?
Of course. Of course.
Aw, it's nice. I mean,
it is nice. That was a good comeback from Matt. Mm-hmm. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to the Mall Calypso playing in the background for reasons having nothing to do with this conversation or Russia or any date that anyone has ever been on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the actor's intonation makes it sound like she's asking, why didn't you tell me you were a gay? Which is like, oh, mate. I know this is a soap, but maybe another take on that one.
Yes. But bottom line, way to be cool, Dr. K. And then she wants to share something and goes to the sideboard to bring back a framed photo that I guess she hid so she wouldn't spook him, which is her 5-year-old daughter, Nikki, who is a tiny wee Mara Wilson. She is at a sleepover. And Matt toasts to Dr. K and Nikki and no more secrets between friends. And it's cute. So it's a nice place to leave it for now. And we have plenty more show to get to. But first, we have a message for Rebecca.
Hi, May. Rebecca's husband told us a little bit about Rebecca and her relationship to Melrose Place. Specifically, that her favorite character is Amanda. Smart. According to Hi, May, Rebecca loves her, quote, determination, beauty, drive, and intelligence. Who amongst us can argue? No one. That's who.
Since Jaime also let us know both that Rebecca is a teacher and that it is her birthday this week, we are marking the special occasion with a list just for her. 5 ways working as a teacher would be more fun if Amanda Woodward were on the faculty.
Number 1, she'll spring for Thai food and she doesn't mind going a long way to pick it up.
Number 2, she'll let you take the Porsche for a spin.
Number 3, she'll invite you out to her parents' lake house. Although if it still doesn't have a TV in this reality, it better at least have Wi-Fi.
Number 4, she'll throw a rager in the quad, and if everyone wants to show up in their dowdiest grunge wear, it's totally fine.
And number 5, problem with the budget? Amanda can just hit up Deus Ex Daddy to magically make up the shortfall.
We've all put on our shortest skirts, not really, but pretend we are, to say... Happy birthday,
Happy
Rebecca!
Birthday, Rebecca!
On to the C-plot. Billy brings Allison to a hotel for journalism stuff. Ugh. Allison is trying to work when Billy strolls up behind her and grabs her by the shoulders. Now, we had to say this with David sneaking up on Donna after she had been stalked twice, but apparently we have to say it here too. Quit sneaking up on stalking victims. They probably are not crazy about surprises.
Yeah. Don't sneak up on anyone, period.
That's really good advice.
Friends of mine have done that to me on the 9 train and gotten an elbow in the tits. Like, just don't do that. Clear your throat, something.
Anyway, Billy is there to tell Allison they are going to the Bryant Mirage in Laguna Niguel the next day because Billy is interviewing John Bryant. Allison is thrilled for him, but Eeyores that she can't go with him. She's on thin ice with Amanda, but it's only for a day and a half. That's all it takes to talk her into it, apparently. But what will she tell Amanda? Clip 5.
Make up a disease and then tell her that it's contagious.
Too soon.
Yeah. Phrasing.
So then it's the next day. Billy's pulling Allison's shitty car into the driveway at the fancy hotel. She's getting out. But
why is he driving?
Because he's a man. Duh.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, I assume that's the reason. So she's getting out, but he waited until right now to tell her he has to check in alone because he was not supposed to bring anyone. Because of course he wasn't. This is a professional assignment. Ugh. He kept this secret because he thought it would add to the excitement of their stay. Fucking Billy. Allison, horrified, asks if he's saying he has to keep her hidden, and he just shrugs, don't worry about it, because saying yes would be too embarrassing, I guess, and tells her to meet him in the presidential suite in 10 minutes. So she does, but she's not happy. Clip six.
Who is it?
Who do you think?
Like, I wouldn't answer the door at this point, but okay, do you, Billy?
But then she sees the room, which is right on the beach. Very nice. And they're on the bed fooling around when the phone rings. And he tries to ignore it, but finally picks up. And of course, it is his interview subject, this John Bryant guy, who insists that Billy join him and his daughter for dinner that night, which Billy reports to Allison when he hangs up. And she's all snitty, like, I didn't exactly hear you arguing, which he is there for work, bitch. What are you doing? But
yeah.
What she is doing is what she always does, which is pouting. So he tells her to enjoy the amenities. Clip seven.
Call room service and order anything you want, okay? Or get a massage or a manicure.
A manicure. Oh, my God. I really had some debate over, like, I spelled that a certain way in my notes, and then you had it a different way in the doc. But it's like, oh, my God. Oh, and before that, oh, so Jersey.
Yeah.
Call room service and order anything you want.
I mean, now I have to know how you spelled it, because for the record, I spelled it like a spinnaker, like that, except manicure. How did you have it?
Right. I just had an I instead of the second A.
Okay.
Manicure.
God. So anyway, he says it's on him, which it's probably on Escapade magazine, actually. But she pouts some more that according to the register, she doesn't exist. Literally all of this, by the way, is on Allison for not having the sense to know he was not supposed to bring her. Like, she should have known this. She's not an idiot.
Well, and also, if it's a work trip, how fun even is that?
Right.
It's a day and a half.
Yeah.
You can fuck when he gets home. Don't get in Dutch with your boss.
Right. Ugh. But she literally lies there on her back with her arms crossed as he kisses her. You are both ridiculous and I hate you. At dinner, John Bryant and his vulgar daughter are talking about the right time to go to Rio. Billy has no opinion because he's never been to Brazil. He also apparently has no opinion about the daughter's hand on his thigh because he just lets her leave it there. And while a functionary is talking to John, the daughter purrs to Billy that she has her own suite and puts a key in his hand. And Billy changes the subject to the wine, and John raises his glass to see if it's a shared opinion, because he's noticed Allison fully staring at them through a window in the dining room. And he thinks it's so sad to see a woman dining alone, which, I mean, it is because it's Allison, but, you know, rude.
Yeah, fuck off.
And the daughter agrees, petting Billy, and Allison sees this and takes her extremely ugly bedspread print dress out of there. You can see it in the visual aids. John wants to know how Billy got started in writing, but Billy wants to crane his neck around to look at this strange woman who's just walked out and then go after her. And he catches up with her, who, Allison, as usual, makes it impossible to take her side in clip eight.
I can't believe I didn't think this through. I can't believe I took off work and risked getting in hot water with Amanda for this.
You know I can't help it.
I know that now, but if I'd known that then, I never would have come here.
You're being ridiculous.
No. Ridiculous is you're getting groped at the table by Bryant's vixen of the week.
It was his daughter.
Well, that's even worse. She was practically in your lap.
She's a pretentious, overdressed, overly made-up brat. Okay? Look, I have to get back. I'm sorry. I told you I'd make it up to you, and I'm gonna.
Why? Fuck her.
Well, yeah, and you can't blame Billy for you risking your job. Like, in the last episode, you fucked up a photo shoot. Like, you can't afford to take a day off to fuck around. Like, that's on you. It's not on him.
Yeah.
But apparently she gets over it, because the next morning she sets a tray of room service on the couch where she made him sleep like a real adult. What changed her mind was reading his file on John Bryant, which, by the way, was not her place. She didn't realize how much he hates publicity and what a coup it is for Billy to get the assignment. And she thought of a campaign for one of her clients in the elevator, and they start flirting. It's gross. Out by the pool, Bryant exposits that he gave Billy 2 hours to interview him, and Billy took four, as if. I mean, I believe that Billy took that long to get to any germane questions, but not that he would have the patience to let him faff around that much.
No.
He further thanks Billy for an intelligent and well-prepared interview, which, note, it took place entirely LOL. Off-screen. Citation needed. But then, clip 9.
My daughter tells me you brought your girlfriend with you. I thought that my instructions on traveling alone were fairly explicit.
They were.
Then why did you deliberately go against my wishes?
First, let me say that I'm very sorry. And you have a beautiful place here, Mr. Bryant, and right now, financially, it's just completely out of my league. And Allison's my best friend and the woman I love, and I guess I just wanted to share it with her. Sorry, that's the truth.
Your best friend and the woman you love. That's how I describe my wife. I want you and Allison to stay the night, be my guest, dinner on me. Or perhaps you might want to try room service. Our guests seem to like it.
Ugh.
Ew.
Also, again, when this show tries to get work right, it's embarrassing. Like, if this subject, if John Bryant were going to say anything or confront Billy about clearly countermanding the specific instructions that he gave, he wouldn't give a 4-hour interview first. It would be like the night before. Oh, my daughter says you brought your girlfriend. Like, goodbye, get out.
Yeah. Also, it's not the Grove.
Right.
It's a hotel. You want publicity. Yeah. That's so dumb. Ugh.
Yes. Also, Billy, like, I'm sorry, that's the truth. Like, are you sorry? Because tell your tone.
Yeah.
Whatever. Ugh. That's the end of the storyline. On to the B plot. Jake is a bad roommate, one time too many. Jake is moodily packing his shit while we see Joe somehow sleeps through all the noise and only sits up when Jake barely touches the glass on a framed photo of them. And she asks what he's doing as though it isn't obvious and forces him to tell her he's moving out. And she's like, just like that. And he finally gets around to explaining. Clip 10.
I can't stay with a woman who doesn't trust me.
What's that supposed to mean?
I mean, what do you mean? What's that supposed to mean?
Right.
That's like the most straightforward line of dialogue in the history of Darren Star fucking productions.
It's true.
Like, can we not with the filler? Yeah.
Yes. Also, this happened last night. Like, you both slept on this in the same bed.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Whatever. So he explains that she didn't not say she thinks he torched the shop for the insurance money and couldn't entertain the thought if she had the same faith in him that he does in her. And she claims she does and asks him not to move out. He wishes that she hadn't had to sleep on it to arrive at that decision, which, you know what? Fair critique. I don't blame him. So later, Mr. Harris, the insurance adjuster, is back at the apartment having Jake tell the story of the fire again. He claims that he and Amanda left together after he turned off the torch, which we know he did not turn off the torch. And Mr. Harris asks if it's possible that Jake didn't turn it off all the way. And the camera is like 4 millimeters from Grant Cho's face as Jake thinks about the question.
He's brushing against his eyelashes.
It really is so close. Like,
so close.
It's like his chin and his eyebrows are not in the frame. That's how close it is.
Yeah.
Finally, after Mr. Harris repeats it, Jake admits it's possible that he didn't turn it off. So then Jake has to go tell Joe what he figured out, probably started the fire. And she has barely had a chance to take this in before he starts punching the wall like a psycho. And she tries to calm him down and, as usual, just revives the same old fight again. Clip 11.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Look, it's not the end of the world.
May not be the end of your world, but it was a big part of mine.
Look, you don't see me getting all upset, all right?
No, I don't, do I? It was my shop.
It was my money.
Right. How could I be so stupid? Your money. Not my shop.
Oh, boy. Guys.
I mean, it's not that I don't think that a couple would fight about this, mm-hmm. or like, you know, that this would cause a rift, but the way that it's being, like, the way that it's being fought about is like estranged from reality mm-hmm. to me, in like a just a weird way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
Since they're going to break up, get on with it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But it's just a little weird that she'd be like, well, you know, what's the big deal? Calm down. No one died. And it's like, I just don't, like, something about this really is like the writers can't be bothered to get it to ring true. They just want to break them up so Jake and Amanda can fuck. Mm-hmm. Spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah. It's partly soap opera writing where it's like you have to restate everyone's positions just in case someone just started watching 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, true.
But you're right that it's like, it's clear what he's upset about. He feels like an idiot. You know, he feels dumb that he did this to himself and she's not getting right. that part of it, you know, and makes it about, well, I lost something too. And he's like, oh, fuck you. Like, I get it. Anyway.
Yeah, I just don't think she would be like that. Also, it's worth noting that in this scene, she puts down a curling iron she was just using without even looking at where it is. Like, keep it off the towels. Just saying.
So he's not trying to hear reason as he goes into the kitchen and starts opening and then slamming the fridge door to make everything fall out and creating a big mess while she screams at him to stop and he ignores her and finally pulls the fridge off the wall and onto the floor and then throws a bottle of red wine at one of her self-portraits and she quietly tells him to get out, which is also fair.
Mm.
And the next day, he comes back from sleeping in the dripping shop, I guess, since he's broke and couldn't sleep in a car he doesn't have, and runs into Amanda, who says the modeling offer still stands. He blows past that and asks if his old apartment is still available. She says it is and asks why he wants to know, and he volunteers all the information Amanda wants to hear about him and Joe being on the rocks. She claims she doesn't believe the breakup's going to last, but Jake insists that he wants his old apartment back and stalks off. And upstairs, Joe morosely cleans up, having apparently waited the night to let all the red wine soak into everything. Like, all the food is still on the floor.
What? Oh, God. Yeah, like, wouldn't you call someone and be like, can you help me tip this fridge back up? Like, oh, God. Dumb.
Anyway. Amanda knocks on the door and reports on her conversation with Jake and then basically shoves past Joe to gawk at all the wreckage that Jake left. And she says she originally came up to try and get Joe to work things out with Jake. Yeah, right. But now, seeing this, she wants to know if Joe is okay. And I actually believe her because it does look very bad. But Joe says she's fine. And Amanda offers not to give Jake the old place back if Joe doesn't want her to, but Joe tells her to do it. She doesn't want to punish him. She just doesn't want to live with him anymore. And that night, Joe finds Jake shooting pool at, where else, Shooters. He's obviously embarrassed about the previous night and tries to smooth things over by offering a drink, which she curtly declines. So he apologizes. She coldly accepts. He notes how little she's saying, so she talks more, telling him his temper scared her and she can't just wave off what happened in the apartment. He wishes he could take it back, but he can't. She already lived with one violent man. She will never do that again. And apparently that's going too far for Jake. Clip 12.
Whoa, 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 what are you saying? That would hit you? I love you, Joe. But never lay a hand on you.
I don't know if I can believe that.
You just don't know me at all, do you?
I'm afraid I really do.
I mean, I don't know. When you're being offended that she thinks after your tantrum that you might injure her, maybe don't advance on her like you're doing.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure there was an attempted arm grab, if not an actual one.
No, he did grab it. She just got out of it. That did happen. So out with, Out with Jane the next day, Joe regrets making Jake think that she's afraid of him hitting her, but she's too proud to tell him because she thinks he wanted out of the relationship. So, this is bad to me because it makes it seem like she just said that to hurt him, not because she actually thought that it was possible that he could escalate, which, you know, as you said, I don't think that's unreasonable based on his behavior.
No, I don't either. Like, even if it was an accident, like, he's clearly... like, what if he had missed with the wine bottle? Like,
yeah.
you know.
Anyway, then Jake tracks Joe down at a photo shoot and she's glad because she wanted to talk to him. But before she says anything, he says he went to the insurance company today and gives her a check for what's left after the deductible, which is $35,000. He will get her the other $15,000 as soon as he can and will put that in writing if she wants. But she doesn't want any of it. It's for him to start his new shop. But there's not going to be a new shop, he says. She doesn't get what he's trying to tell her. So, clip 13.
Well, I mean, it's for you. I mean, for us, whatever we decide to do.
Let me tell you something. When a man trusts a woman, he either totally trusts her or he doesn't. Women trust men in categories. I totally trusted you. I don't think there's a single category you trusted me in.
Come on, don't. I mean, I know I said some things in the last few days that
Please,
I didn't say them right.
Don't even try. Don't even try. The damage is done. I never told anyone I loved him before. And when I told you that, I meant it from my soul. And well, I'm never going to go out on a limb like that again. I didn't want your money, Joe. I wanted your heart. I think by the time I came around, it was so beaten and broken by other people and things that I didn't have anything to do with. It was never really yours to give to me. I want you to keep your money. Don't ever offer it to me again.
Jake.
This is pretty rich. I mean,
fuck that. Let him go. Bye, baby.
Yeah. Leaving aside the whole women trust men in categories, which, like, I don't even know where to start with that. Like, him acting like he was the one who was evolved and she was too fucked up to love him properly. Like,
yeah,
okay, daddy issues, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. And it reminds me of, like, Dylan acting like he was the wronged party in the Brenda Kelly triangle. Like,
yes.
Ugh.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, bye. After a commercial, Allison is babbling on and on to Joe about her amazing time at the hotel until she finally notices Joe's expression and Joe tells her about Jake moving out. Joe blames herself for everything. And that night beside the pool, Jake drinks many beers with Billy, who isn't so sure things with Jake and Joe are totally over. Jake cynically thinks the more money you have, the more women trust you. Very doubtful. But what's upsetting Jake is less about the money, of course. Clip 14.
You want to know the worst part?
No.
Joe honestly believed that I was going to hit her. She didn't trust me enough to know that I wouldn't harm her hair in her head.
Well, maybe she just needed a little more time.
Yeah. You say time, I say instinct. You say Caribbean or do you say Caribbean?
I say you gotta ease up on the beers.
Good advice.
Also, Billy doesn't know anything. Don't ask him.
Yeah.
Billy asks what Jake is gonna do now. Jake needs to make some money fast. Billy turns in. Jake glares up at a second floor door and he walks up the stairs. But not to Joe's. He knocks on Amanda's door and poses in the doorway. And when she opens it, he says he's changed his mind. He will take that modeling job. And he's started already, given the way he's standing. But whatever, she's thrilled. And when he trudges off to bust his beer bottles, I hope, because Billy didn't. Amanda is also horny as hell. And that's where we leave them, as Sarah said. We're just rearranging puzzle pieces so these two can get ready to fuck. On to the A-plot. One Mancini versus Mancini witness could use more coaching. Over breakfast, the same day that Sam was there, weirdly, even though the last episode closed with Jake and Joe fighting about how the fire in the shop started, and that was at night, yeah. So presumably hours later, but fine.
This timeline throughout, like, Jake already got an insurance check from, yeah. P.S., a life insurance company. That wasn't in the clip, but what the fuck, guys? Okay.
Jane is yelling at Sydney about having told Michael about Jane's date with Sam. Sydney doesn't exactly deny it, but doesn't confirm it either. Jane wants to know if Sydney has seen Michael since they had lunch together, and Sydney is not a good liar yet, so she just rolls her eyes so that Jane and her too dark early 90s lipstick obviously know the answer is yes, but instead just goes, have you? And Sydney goes, no. And Jane doesn't bother pretending to believe her and whines that Sydney's supposed to be on Jane's side, like we have been saying this whole time. So Sydney lies that Michael keeps calling and won't leave her alone. She wanted to tell Jane, but Jane threatened to kick her out if they were in contact. And she also tries the, he was a brother-in-law I loved so much tack, which Jane openly scoffs at. Sydney says the Sam nudes just slipped out because she doesn't know what she's allowed to say anymore. And Jane says the depositions start today, so she needs to know Sydney will keep her private life private. But Sydney has to tell the truth if she's called Jane, and you know that. It's a moot point because Sydney is not called, but whatever. Sydney just says Jane can trust her, gives her a plaintive look, and then a glare after Jane leaves. At the hospital elevator, Michael gives Kimberly a peck on the cheek in apology for being shitty to her that morning. In case you forgot, because it was the last episode, he accused Kimberly and her dowdy wardrobe of making him impotent, but says his deposition is happening that day and he'll make them dinner that night to celebrate. And at the deposition, Michael comes in hot, saying the divorce is due to Jane's affair with Sam, embroidering the story of that one time they kissed 6 months ago. And Jane snaps that Michael is lying, and her lawyer, who is Stephen Eckholt, guest star extraordinaire,
yep,
playing Robert Wilson, not the one from House, tells her just to let Michael perjure himself, which, okay. Someone who knows about depositions, tell us if this is a smart strategy, because it seems dumb to me. But anyway, Michael says that Jane's accusations are a cover for her own infidelity, and that she's still fooling around with Sam as of last week, and Jane loses it in clip 15.
That is not true. How can he do this?
How could I continue to live with a woman? Sleep in the same bed. Knowing that another man is touching her. Making love to her. Making a mockery of the sanctity of our marriage.
Dr. Mancini, isn't it true that you were and are having a sexual relationship with Dr. Kimberly Shaw?
That's ridiculous.
I made a gif of this, but Michael makes this face when he asks this, like he's pretending he can't really even place who Kimberly is, which is hilarious.
Yeah, like he really has dug in both heels, yep, into the seal turn. It's amazing.
It's great. So Jane loses it even more, so much so that Robert Wilson has to usher her out to cool down. And in a conference room, Jane claims she's okay, and Robert calls Michael quite a storyteller. She tells him the truth about Sam, and Robert is pissed that she didn't mention him before, and is right. That is information that he needed as her lawyer. But Jane says he's missing the point. Everything Michael said in there is a lie. Robert will have to make sure Michael's lies don't sound better than her truth. Good point, counselor. Get right with your lawyer, Jane, you dipshit, which is basically what he tells her. That night, Jane is shopping at Grocery Warehouse. Pictures for sure from 1973. You can see in the visual aids. When she spies Michael and intentionally rams her cart into his so she can start yelling at him for his performance earlier. His position is that she forced him into fighting dirty and is completely unapologetic about it. And she threatens him with with perjury charges, about which he seems unconcerned. She can tell his card contents that he's making his famous chicken cacciatore and dumps out his jar of, like, Prego sauce on his head. So on top of everything else about Michael that's bad, he's also a garbage Italian. There, I said it. Anyway, so you can see this the sauce dump in the visual aids. Of course, I gifted. Talking to Joe, Jane says that Kimberly's deposition is happening that day and wonders what Kimberly will say. Well, clip 16.
lie, Kimberly. It's that easy.
Look, Doc, it's just no big deal. Trust me.
I don't know, Michael.
Think of it as math, okay? One story multiplied by two doctors, the whole is even better than the sum of its parts.
You're asking me to lie, Michael, in a legal proceeding, in a matter of law.
Yeah, well, the law isn't exactly on my side here. You do this, and we are home free. To be together and to keep what's rightfully ours. Please? Okay, come on. You can do it.
Hold still. Here comes the needle.
Jesus. So then it's Kimberly's deposition. She is visibly nervous as hell, particularly about Jane sitting there staring daggers at her while she is deposed. Robert comes straight to the point in clip 17.
Dr. Shaw, are you having an affair with Dr. Michael Mancini?
No.
Have you ever had sexual relations with Dr. Mancini?
No.
If that's true, why did you tell Mrs. Mancini on the evening of the 14th of October that the affair wasn't over? That as long as both of you were being honest, you thought she should know?
I'm afraid she's mistaken. I don't remember having a conversation like that.
That's unusual. Doctors usually have pretty good memories. Let me refresh yours for you, Dr. Shaw. You also said that Dr. Mancini told you about his and his wife's previous evening at a hotel. But, and I quote, don't think that means he plans to give me up. I needn't remind you that you are under oath, Dr. Shaw, and with that looms the possibility of perjury. Have you ever had sexual relations with Dr. Michael Mancini? Dr. Shaw, answer the question. Have you ever had sexual relations with Dr. Michael Mancini? Dr. Shaw, answer the question.
Yes.
Are you continuing to do so?
Yes.
Thank you.
Woo!
This is quite a satisfying scene, I have to say.
It is.
Yeah, like the questioning is really well constructed. Marcia Cross is doing a hell of a job with, like, we all know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But she acts the hell out of it. So good for her.
I mean, I now know from this reunion that she went to Juilliard. That's the kind of thing they teach you, I guess.
Yep.
Soap opera acting. So then Kimberly has to go to the hospital and tell Michael the bad news about how she totally cracked, and he is about as understanding as you would expect, which is to say not. In fact, he becomes the second man in this episode to punch a wall like a psycho.
And then be grabby.
Yes, and she is alarmed at first, but gets her feet under her soon enough. Clip 18.
Did you see what you've done here? You have screwed up everything. I mean, you screwed up my future, our future, maybe the rest of our lives.
After everything I've put up with from you, how dare you?
You know how, Kimberly? Unlike you, I was looking out for the both of us. We'll take this up tonight.
Right.
I love that. Right.
Kimberly. Kimberly.
I know. I wish I thought she would stay, but, you know, I know what happens. Alas. Yeah. And that's it. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Robert Wilson, attorney at law. This is what you get when you get a recommendation from Amanda.
Marcia Cross, Juilliard graduate. That ruled. And also, I just love that Michael's like, we're going to straighten this out. And she's like, fuck you. I just thought that was great.
Yep. Least valuable player. Michael Mancini, quit threatening women, learn to make your own sauce.
Jake.
Put on good, your big boy choices. Pants,
pick up the fridge, and go fuck yourself. You're going to stitch that on a pillow. But before you do, Next time on Again With This, Dr. Katya proposes a green card cosplay, Billison try their hand at matchmaking, we all learn a very important lesson about the fringe benefits of becoming a divorce lawyer. Put some Visine on retainer before you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com, where you can also order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/againwiththis, where any level of support gets you extra episodes. I'm queen of the two-word sentences, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is my best friend and the woman I love, Tara Ariano, and she is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Matter of Law, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.